877-KPFK-AUTO. An operator will arrange a good time to pick up your vehicle. 877-KPFK-AUTO or go online to kpfk.org.
KPFK, Los Angeles.
The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett.
Everybody's talking about consciousness. Everybody wants that eternal kiss. Yeah, everyone's saying there's more than this. Everyone wants to follow their own bliss. Talking about one love, one blood, one light in everyone. One light, give each other.
On the Expansion Zone, we examine life and our quest to understand who and what we are and of the vastness of human potentials. We explore the making of our world from quantum physics to parapsychology, health, sociology, and philosophy, along with practical living. You are reminded of the possibilities in creating personal change. So for an hour, we'll stimulate and expand the mind. Well, welcome once again to another edition of The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett. I'm, of course, your host, Sonia Barrett. And as always, I really love to thank Donna DeLore for our intro song, Be the Change. A very appropriate thought to remember, idea to remember at this time, because it's very necessary for each of us to really look at ourselves, you know, and see where we can make changes that will impact the world the way that it's being interpreted at this time. Now, my quote for today, Monday, of course, is life begins at the end of your comfort zone. And that's by Neil Donald Walsh. And really, really very important quote. Today's topic is the Montauk Project's Experiments in Time. And this is actually the silver edition that came out earlier this year. Our guest is going to be talking about it. And also a new book as well, Forgotten Genesis. And this is about changes in DNA that have taken place over millennia and how mankind has evolved into what it is today. So the book covers quite a bit. And of course, our wonderful guest that's going to be sharing all of this information regarding these two books is Peter Moon, who I just love speaking to because it's always fascinating and it's always engaging. And I think the quote is extremely appropriate right now as well with what the things that we're going to talk about. And that is about leaving that comfort zone. I cannot emphasize that enough. Life really truly begins at the end of that comfort zone. And that comfort zone for a lot of people is about a solid and finite belief in whether it be a belief about, you know, them as themselves and, you know, thoughts that they have about who they think they are or their limitations, or about reality, or about just the world around us, how, you know, about human beings, about our design. And we only continue to expand or evolve or however you want to phrase it, because somebody and someone and people, you might not be you, but we keep pushing the envelope in discovering more about who we are, what's possible, you know, what shapes life, we keep pushing the envelope. So it's not about those safe and final conclusions that people tend to have about what they think reality is or what's possible and what they've defined or accepted as not being possible. And I emphasize that because this is what the show is about. It's the expansion zone. It is about expanding the mind, opening up our minds to bigger possibilities. We hardly know anything, in all honesty, about our human existence here. And that's what I do. I dig in further. I want to know, I want to understand, and not limit my interpretation to what feels comfortable and safe to me. So I hope that you do open up your mind to all that will be shared today. Now, a bit of bio. You know, Peter has been on the show a number of times, and I've been interviewing Peter Moon for years. I'm going to say, yeah, at least 10 years of different times of interviewing him. Just briefly, Peter Moon was born and raised in California. Peter Moon is primarily known for his investigation of space-time projects. These concern projects in the past, present, and future that control both time and perception of time. This began in 1990 when Peter met scientist Preston Nichols, one of the world's foremost experts in the world on electromagnetic phenomenon, who had been involved in strange experiments at the Montauk Air Force Station on Long Island, which included the manipulation of time. Their collaboration in writing the Montauk Project, Experiments in Time, and its subsequent sequels have now reached legendary proportions. Of course, sadly, Preston passed away in October of 2018. And so we could go on and on, but you know, the time always goes very fast when I'm speaking with Peter. But I want to say the website you can also check out is timetraveleducationcenter.com, timetraveleducationcenter.com. So, Peter, without further ado, welcome back to the Expansion Zone.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back with you, Sonia.
Yes. Now, I think maybe we can start off with the Montauk Project. Obviously, this is the anniversary edition that came out earlier this year. And what would you like to say, share in a sense of your encounter with this whole project? I mean, where can we begin? I think a lot of people have heard of Montauk or something, but some people might not have heard of the Montauk Project itself. So wherever you think is a good start, that would be great.
Okay, I first learned of the Montauk Project in 1990 when I met scientist Preston Nichols at the local Long Island chapter of the U.S. Psychotronics Association. Psychotronics is a word that has to do with the interface between electronics and the human mind, body, and spirit. Preston was giving a lecture. He was the president of the local chapter, and he was giving a panel lecture with a group of panelists that were local members of Psychotronics on earth changes, which we've been experiencing a lot lately in the last few years. And a lot of what was the majority of what was discussed was the Philadelphia experiment, 1943, when the Navy made a ship appear invisible to radar, and it also went out of this dimension. When I first heard of the Philadelphia experiment, I thought it was absolutely crazy. Now I was in an environment listening to Preston and his colleagues, Duncan Cameron and Al Bielek, both of whom identified with the Philadelphia experiment and said they were involved in it. So it was like a more of a firsthand account than what I'd heard before. And it had a lot of what you would call plausibility to it by reason of their sort of inside view. And they kept talking a lot about something called the Montauk Project, which was involved in mind control, time travel, with a lot of German research from the Third Reich. So I was very interested in it. I went to the meetings for 6 months. There was a lot of trepidation around the whole subject and around the people involved with the subject. So I staked this place out for about 6 months, went to probably all of the meetings that I could, eventually forged a relationship with Preston Nichols to write the book, The Montauk Project Experiments in Time, which turned out to be very successful, mostly because I had the experience to an ability to present it in a fashion that was digestible for mass market, digestible. And even then, there's still a lot of trepidation and rancor it can present. But as I began to, now this is a story about mind control, time travel. I think most of your listeners are probably somewhat familiar with it. And this, after 25 years of publication of the original book, I wrote a silver anniversary edition because there were certain things at the time the book was written that could not be said for reasons of security or protection of Preston and the connections he had. And it was now it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter now that he's passed away. It didn't even matter in the last few years before he passed away. But when I told him that I was going to reveal the company that he worked for, he says, I don't know if that's a good idea. And I said to him, Preston, nobody cares anymore. You know, he was an old man, not exactly on his deathbed, but headed there. And he was still mentally possessed by the security. I also said to him, I said, you know, in the book, it says you are under a 30-year non-disclosure agreement with regards to the Philadelphia experiment. He says, oh, it was 50. He made that up. He didn't want to talk about it. So he was very programmed to not talk about certain things. Now, what I reveal in this book, and I publish the book word for word as with the original book. I didn't change it. But what I do is I, at the end of each chapter where it applies, I add an italics and I tell a story of this was that. And one of the most relevant stories is that he was part of his assigned duties. He worked at Airborne Instruments Laboratory on Long Island. And Airborne Instruments Laboratory, known as AIL, was a top security defense contractor. Their name was all over the Montauk transmitter in Camp Hero, which is where the project took place, most of it. And you could see it out there before most of that was taken out or whatever. But that and Sperry gyroscope was heavily involved. But AIL was where he worked. And it was that company where he went into an underground facility where he would be transported. He would go into four coils and then he would have between four coils and have an experience changing in time. In the early days, one of the security guards who worked there became one of our fans, or he'd show up to the meetings, and he heard this story and he went down to check out that area as a security guard. He was told to stay the hell away from there. It's high security. If he goes over there again, he'll be disciplined. So whatever went on in that room, it was definitely high security. Now, working for AIL Preston, one of his assignments was to study the information on the Philadelphia experiment. The Philadelphia experiment was a whole file he studied on it. And of course, it had everything to do with stealth technology, stealth radar. And this is stuff Preston still could never talk about because it was defense secret. He even mentions in the book that I can't talk about that. Because it all involves radar. So there are high levels of stealth that he genuinely could not talk about. And that's why he would shy away from this. So that is one thing that is revealed. But what's more important, and there are other different anecdotes and whatnot, but in the second part, part two, is a book that's written by myself, because when we wrote the Montauk Project, and it was published in 1992, well, actually, when I first began writing it, Preston told me to go out to Montauk and get a feel for it, and take a psychic with me. Well, this began to what happened from my initial meeting with Preston and my attempts to verify the project resulted in two investigations, two entirely separate approaches. They were still the same investigation, but they were two separate approaches. The first was just a routine journalistic approach, just as anybody would investigate anything from a reference point of newspaper, library, on-site investigations, on-site report, so on and so forth. The second investigation was an occult investigation, an occult trail. Now, the reason for this investigation was the night I met Preston, he laid on me information which was resulted in me having experiences and coincidences or synchronicity, amazing associations that do not make sense in terms of a normal linear reference frame. So it's like you might, so what kept turning up were the names Cameron and Wilson kept showing up, Cameron and Wilson, and they were all connected to Aleister Crowley, the man who identified himself as the B666 Antichrist. So there were two investigations, the occult investigation, which I did by myself, and the journalistic investigation, which I did in cooperation with Preston Nichols. And as I wrote this book, I forgot how much involved Preston was. It was like we were a total team on the journalistic investigation. This meant that, because he had all this equipment, we went out to Montauk, and he basically, with my support and assistance and writing on it, established that there were illegal transmissions emanating from Camp Hero at a time when it was declared to be a state park, but you couldn't have access to it, which was in violation of New York state law, wherein 2/3 of the park should have access. Public should have access to 2/3 of it. You would go out there and get chased or harassed by different people who either said they worked for the state or drove around in unidentifiable blazers and were very vicious and mean in chasing you off the base. Yet it was a public park, supposedly. That resulted in a trial, which is touched on in the book and covered more extensively in the book Pyramids of Montauk, whereas we established Preston, this is Preston, in a court of law where he was ticketed for being on the base. The judge ruled in his favor because the base should be a state park. As a result, the entire Camp Hero, where the Montauk Project occurred, got an entire facelift, and it became a state park with picnic tables, which nobody ever uses, and it had a whole detoxification done to it, which I do not believe was a complete, sincere detoxification, but nevertheless, they opened it to the public, so you can go out there now. But
isn't that just topical, though? I mean, what if like a... Yeah, that's sort of like a veiled over everything else that was going on or possibly is still going on. It's sort of distracting.
Well, the bottom line is you can go out there now, and that changed. Now, the occult investigation dovetailed with the journalistic investigation because what I found out was all of the occult investigation, not all of it, but it led me to the revelation and a picture, which I share in this book and also in the book Pyramids of Montauk, that there were ancient Indian pyramids at Montauk, and the family name were the Pharaohs. Now, this put a question of ownership into the deed of the property, and the deed showed that it was a phony deed. It was a quitclaim deed from U.S. government to New York State, and that they could take it back anytime they wanted to, and that they retained rights to the underground. So there is an actual deed. It's been separately reported, but it's somewhere hidden in the archives of the United States. It's not for viewable. It's not to be viewed. There's an actual deed supposedly that goes back to at least the days of George Washington, who ordered the first a public works project of the United States was a lighthouse at Montauk Point. Now, the fact that there were pyramids there and that the Montauk Indians who were the custodians of the pyramid were known as the pharaohs and claimed to have descent from Egypt tells us that the pharaoh in Egyptology is the interlocutor between heaven and earth. He is the way station between heaven and earth. So this is the most important point with regards to the harmony between the heavens and the earth. And of course, Montauk represents a interference point, especially when you consider that they're using radar to jam the frequency between the heaven and the earth. And the pharaohs were displaced, their property was taken, and this is why the deed is funny. And they were declared an extinct tribe when they are not by New York State. That was by New York State. Now, we established beyond any shadow of a doubt, evidence of mind control, evidence of conspiracy, evidence of illegal transmissions, basically corroborated everything the first book said, except for time travel. That's the one thing we couldn't, you know, bring demonstrable proof of. However, in 1998, or was it 99? It was 1999, on August 11th, during the famous biorhythm of the Montauk Project and Philadelphia experiments, which both occurred in August 12th of 1943 and 83, there was a man who came to our meeting, Dr. David Anderson. Over the year, he had a time travel research center on Long Island, and over the years, and Sonia has interviewed him in the past with me.
Yes.
And in...
He's very difficult, at least back then, he didn't really, it's very hard to get him for an interview. And the only reason why he did was because of Peter.
Well, I wish I could interview him again, but I did actually have the greatest interview ever I had with him in 2015, in 2010, he had a time travel research center where he could slow down and speed up time in a small contained field about the size of a soccer ball. By 2010, he had developed it to the point where he said that humans could be sent back and forth in time. This was after extensive lectures he gave in Romania in 2009, which I attended in Romania. And he explained time travel, the theory, and he also put up a website, but it was not until 2015 that I was able to break down that website, key aspects of it, and put into simple, understandable English what at an eighth grade level of mathematics to demonstrate that time travel does not violate the laws of either physics or mathematics. He was so pleased with the article that he asked for permission to use it when he would speak to groups of people, whether it be at universities or in private industry. I said, well, of course, it's your work. I just, you know, made it
simplified it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he said, yeah, nobody's had the patience to do that if they understood it. So this later resulted in me subsequently making it even further demonstrable in videos, which I've now released for free at the timetraveleducationcenter.com. All you need to do is enter your email. I have more videos of him if one becomes a paid subscriber, but we established that time travel is both possible and within the laws of science. And this was really sort of the coup de grace, and it's explained in the book, but is cutting edge and as fascinating as this is, and as many people who have seen the videos and understand them, it sort of falls on dead ears. It's like, yes. So what? It's not much difference than saying Jesus came and died for our sins. So what? You still have the sins. You're still here. One can be cynical about any great occurrence or discovery if one does not have any trafficking with the discovery. It's just okay. This is why Marco Polo comes back from China and he is considered a threat by the church and the government, because it's all sort of new information and inventions, discoveries, etc., that they cannot control. So basically, set out to this incredible story of the Montauk Project, and of course, I have been involved with the investigation ever since. And this brings up you were talking earlier about people coming out of their comfort zone. And many people's comfort zone is pain and indoctrination. It's not just staying in the house and watching the Home and Garden Channel or watching sitcoms. That's somewhat benign, but people are actually indoctrinated to a great deal of negativity. And the story of the Montauk Project, because it is so negative, can play off of that negativity. And therefore, it is a double-edged sword, because everything can be so negative. So this is part of the reason people will resonate with the more negative aspects on it and start to point out all of the things wrong with society, of which there are no shortage, rather than, wow, this is incredible technology, whereby...
Right, but it's a secure and safe way. I mean, which is why people stick in their comfort zone. It's the security and the safety of what they've been told or indoctrinated with. There's some sort of safety and security with that.
It's an illusory safety. Mm-hmm. However, people have a lot of pain and indoctrination, which makes them distort the relative importance of the information. And this is just a fact of life. It could be said with most anything. A good example of Christianity is the Inquisition. Let's take Christianity, which is, in its best, a message of love, and let's twist it into a control mechanism to use on the population and right. to scare them, so on and so forth.
And to kill people, approved to validate doing that, wiping out mass amounts of people, which we've seen over the, years.
Right. And this is so important because it has to do with everything, with the character and quality of people themselves. So this is actually more of a problem than most anything else, is the inner character and quality of people and how that will manifest in negative activities and responses. So
real quickly, Peter, I just want to say that you, in a brief description that you have in the book, I want to point this out, because I like the way it was written. I mean, it does say the Montauk Project experiments in time was originally released in 1992, causing an uproar and shocking the scientific, academic, and journalistic communities, all of whom were very slow to catch on to the secret world that lurks beyond the superficial veneer of American civilization. And I stopped you for a second because I really think that is so important here, this in terms of American civilization. I think that people they don't understand. They just don't get the design and the shaping and the creation of whatever country. We're talking about America, but countries, how they're designed and shaped by certain people and ideas and concepts and hidden mysteries. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Conspiracy became mainstream with 9/11. Mm-hmm. It became mainstream to where it's now discussed it still is discussed with some irreverence, but it's mainstream. Conspiracy is now mainstream, and the idea. And of course, what do they have this stuff? The Jeffrey Epstein stuff. They call it the deep state. All of this stuff is like, it's been mainstream. The problem with it is nobody really does anything about it. It's just like the Jeffrey Epstein case just sort of sits there. Boy, does COVID-19 take everybody's attention off of Jeffrey Epstein. and the fires help too. It takes everybody's attention off of COVID-19 if you live in
constant distraction.
Part of this is life. Part of it is, you know, purposely engineered. And so you have a lot of, but back in the day, people, when this was written, is, you know, it woke people up like, hey, there's a lot more going on than the average knucklehead is even going to consider. And right now, the average knucklehead needs to be more concerned with their survival in this morass of confusion and chaos than they do with what conspiracy theory is the most important, because you have to put food on your table and you have to put good food on your table. So life is different than it was when this was written almost 30 years ago. So life has changed, and knowing conspiracy, knowing what's going on is important, but survival is important as well, and the right survival. So there's been so many lies and misinformation told, and a lot of it is coming to the surface as we now move into the decade of the 20s, the roaring or ominous 20s.
Right.
Whatever that will be called.
Now, I think that we are at a point where we do need to take a quick break, Peter. So we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I would love to lead into Forgotten Genesis, because I think we'll see how that all sort of dovetails, everything that we've been talking about, how it leads into this other area of information that Peter will share from the new book. So please stay tuned, and we will be right back after this brief break.
I'm Andrew Tonkovich of KPFK's weekly literary arts show, Bibliocracy. Support this program and the station by hitting the online donations button at kpfk.org. Choose the monthly donation option and, like me, become a sustaining member all year round. Thank you.
I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Oh, yeah. I don't want to do your dirty work no more. I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Oh, yeah.
Light the candle, put the lock upon the door. You have sent the maid home early, like a thousand times before. Like the castle in its corner, in a medieval game, I foresee terrible trouble, and I stay here just the same.
I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Oh, yeah. I don't want to do your dirty work no more. I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Oh, yeah. I'm a fool to do oh, yeah. I don't want to do your dirty work no more. I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Oh, yeah. I don't want to do your dirty work no more. I'm a fool to do your dirty work.
And we are back. You're, of course, tuned in to KPFK 90.7 FM in Southern California and streaming live at kpfk.org. You are listening to The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett, and that's me, of course, and my guest today is Peter Moon, who I've had on the show quite a number of times, and we were talking about the anniversary of the Montauk Project, the anniversary of the book, which came out earlier this year, The Montauk Project, Experiments in Time. And now we're going to lead into the actual newest book of the Radu Cinema series, Forgotten Genesis. And so let's go from there, Peter, in sort of leading into...
Okay, so when the Montauk Project was translated into the Romanian language in about 18 years ago or thereabouts, maybe 16 years ago, it was read by a person in the most secret Department of Romanian Intelligence, Department Zero. His pen name is Radu Cinemar, and he produced a series of books in the Romanian language that were published by the publisher, Sorin Hormuz, Daksha Publishing, published them in Romania, and I have since published them in English. They're called the Transylvania series, the first one being Transylvania Sunrise. It's a whole series of adventures concerning a holographic technology from the ancient past beneath the Romanian Sphinx. There's a Sphinx in Romania. And basically, this is Forgotten Genesis is the sixth book in the series. And Radu is able to access this holographic technology where he has a sort of a viewer screen and he takes copious notes because he's going to tell this story to the world. Now, there are many aspects to this holographic technology and to the holographic chamber beneath the Sphinx. What's important is that when you get into the existential aspects of reality, it's very similar to a hologram, not identical to, but virtually the same, similar if not the same. So the technology of this more advanced civilization reflects that. So there's also a lot of telepathic transference between him and the equipment. And he basically is being guided by leaders from an inner earth civilization. And he goes into a whole investigation that he's seeing in holography of the ancient past of mankind. And he goes into the details of DNA, how it manifested, how some beings were more related to earthly, beastly, simian-type creatures, and how some were more related to off-world and other planet DNA, Sirian DNA, whereby their DNA was more, what's the word, amicable to spirituality and flowing in and out of the body, so to speak. The more earthly beings were more caveman-like, more linear in their function and expression and more survival oriented, or eat food, drink water sort of thing. And of course, all of this was seeded. It was seeded by higher intelligence in the name of life. Now, one can, I suppose, make arguments about any of the stuff that's in the book, take pot shots at it or whatnot. But one of the most perhaps relevant and cogent points that he makes is that life exists best when there is diversity. Life needs diversity to evolve and express itself and to create new horizons. And this is what life is about. And this is what these engineers of life from other planets, realms of consciousness, or whatever you want to say, are, this is what their function is. So you have certain environments that are discussed in his books where the diversity is rather stale, for lack of a better word, especially inside the Earth, where their fauna and flora are very limited compared to what we have on the Earth. Nevertheless, they're very highly developed to a certain point. But when it comes to just raw situation of the Earth, the whole trick is to foster situations where you can have this great diversity. And Earth is known for its diversity. All the different continents have diverse, different types of fauna and flora. And then mankind evolves with this diversity. So this makes a lot of sense where it go. Well, and, but also he says the stars are very much involved. It can take hundreds of thousands of years for these situations to precipitate into a environment that's conducive to life and evolution of life. So he doesn't really get into this aspect too much, but it, what tells me is that where we're living at, where we're living in this 21st century, and with all of the new inventions and all of the things happening, even for the last couple hundred years, we're living in a critical time, which took a long, long time to get here.
Oh, absolutely.
Long, long time.
A long time. And here we are. And you know, what this reminds me of when we were talking, you were talking about the holographic technology, and I was reading it again. It reminds me of the movie Mission to Mars, which of course we know that a lot of these writings, sci-fi, this information, we see sprinkles of some of these things showing up. Obviously, it is a time when it is necessary for human beings to start wrapping their minds around a more expansive, you know, idea and interpretation of reality. But I don't remember if you've seen that.
I saw it on an airplane many years ago. I don't even remember it.
Yeah, this is a long time ago. But yes, they showed the screen, and it was the alien, from Mars. They showed this massive screen showing the evolution of Earth, of human beings, and it just kept going. It was really a great film. I think towards the end was one of the best parts of the of the movie. But anyway, bottom line of it is all of this information is stirring the human mind.
Well, yes, and we're in a very weird place right now, because it's like if you had, it's like if we were all dependent on a big water faucet for our water, it's like somebody's got their thumb in there with a diseased thumb, or wants to put a diseased thumb in there. It's going to affect all of humanity. You have the tech titans of Silicon Valley who are outright evil and insane. Outright evil and insane.
Yeah.
Addicted to adrenochrome and pushing insane leftist policies that do no good for anybody. They don't even make any sense except to create chaos.
And control.
Yeah, I don't know how much control they're actually capable of having.
Because, well, yeah.
No, seriously, because they have these agendas to control, but their capability is zilch. It's like they're not sane enough to create a system to control everybody.
And no, yeah.
With all of their intelligence and all of their power, they can't even do a good, their public relations is so bad that they have people fighting them who would not ordinarily fight a leftist agenda. So
it's a different kind of, yeah, I and you're right. You're exactly right. I think what happens though is people who are already in a comfort zone space or more pliable in the sense of being redirected, I think that's from that perspective, I think, is kind of basically what I mean. It might not be the control they were looking for. Influence, that's the word.
Yeah, but they don't have control.
Influence.
They will never have control.
That's the word.
And one of and it occurred to me that if you know people worry about a civil war if Trump wins, I think there's a greater danger of a civil war if Trump loses, because of the right would be more outraged. In other words, what you see going on right now with the Antifa and the Black Lives Matter will be nothing compared to what the Patriot Tea Party type people will do to, in their view, correct things. But I don't think Trump will lose the election. I think that Biden is much less popular than the polls are telling us, and that you know, Trump is definitely earned a lot of what do you call it, criticism for his certain things that he does. But Biden is a complete fool, a complete and utter fool, a complete fool, a complete idiot. But, and these are not, this is not my opinion. This is just, you know, you could categorize him. You could show all of these different things. He doesn't stand for anything. He blows with the wind.
And this is such a touchy subject. I mean, the political thing is so very, very touchy, because people are very impassioned with sticking to generational, you know, parties. And at this point, you know, for me anyway, it's not about the party.
I don't think it's generational party. I think one of the biggest problems is that there is so much disenfranchisement by the young people, that of being disenfranchised from society. And Trump doesn't bring them anything. He has no solutions for them. He certainly has no solutions for healthcare. And what Trump is good for is the old guard. He's good for the old guard. But the old guard does not take responsibility for all of this horrible, horrible things that have been done to the young people, of charging them all this money for an education that's mostly useless, and then they're in debt. The extreme liberals like AOC has good ideas in terms of the idealism of the idea. Let's take care of the whole world. There is no pragmatic sense of implementation, no know-how whatsoever. So, you know, there's a lot of, and would completely undermine and change everything in a way that would be destructive.
Yeah, but this is, it's a massive situation. And I think, again, it goes back to everything that we're talking about, everything that's being said, and you start connecting the dots. You see just how deep this rabbit hole goes as to the current structure or behavior that we're dealing with on the planet at this time, by those who call themselves leaders and the people who are easily swayed or influenced in directions that do not really serve
I will give you a clue as to how this will resolve, in abstractly, not specifically. But it was Aleister Crowley and both Madame Blavatsky who both pointed out something, that they refer to these characters called the secret chiefs that control everything. They're behind the whole conspiracy. And when you get down to the bottom of who the secret chiefs are, this is why they're called, and you know, the mysterious UFO documents are called MJ-12, Majestic 12, the great 12. 12 is always the great number that surrounds in a Wiccan cult. You have 13, the high priestess in the center, and the 12 disciples. You also have this Jesus, and the 12 disciples are patterned after this. It's all patterned after something called the close packing of spheres. If you pick a round sphere or a marble, you can fit 12 around it. So you have 13 make a complete packed series of spheres. However, what these 12 secret chiefs are, it's revealed to deep initiates, is that they're nothing but the archetypal signs of the zodiac themselves, the 12 signs of the zodiac. So the zodiac is just a randomly assigned pattern of stars that fit into a circle around the sky. And people for tens of thousands of years have been noticing the patterns and that what happens as they roll around the sky. I one time saw something very interesting on a Caribbean island. Every day at 2 o'clock, clouds would come over this volcanic island and rain. Every day at 2 o'clock, it was like boop, boop, every day, never missed. Okay, it's 2 o'clock, it's gonna rain. I never saw that before. I've never seen it since. But that's a biorhythm. It's a rhythm of life. So you can associate the stars with the biorhythms, but basically what you're seeing here play out on the political scene, astrologers are having field days with it because they can say all of these conjunctions of the government planet Saturn is with Pluto, that which usurps and transmutes and forms. So these are the real players, and the politicians and the people and the media all play to that tune. All play to that tune.
They
so there
sure
are
do.
Patterns of influence in the stars. We talk about influencers. That so when these great evil people, they're only playing out their role as influenced by the stars. The stars makes it easier sometimes to do things. It's no different than being in a situation where you can influence it as opposed to being in a situation where you cannot do anything.
So interestingly, of course, Hollywood and the, you know, people being considered influencers, and they're also known as stars. So, I mean, you know, it's all this similar thing, but I think we do have a few minutes left. So I do want you to pick up where you, what you were going to say, Peter, but I also want to point out in chapter four, this chapter is Humanity's Origin on Earth from the Cosmic to the Quantum Level. And here there's an emphasis on the significance of human health and the evolution of humankind, which I was so pleased to see that, because people just don't get it. The significance of the body, the transformation of the body in terms of health and the you know, expansion, evolution, growth.
Well, that is, of course, a very positive idea. And I've seen a lot of people in my life where there were no signs of apparent growth, but that's just my perspective. That's only my perspective.
I understand.
They maybe they did. I mean, they sure fooled me if they did, but they had an experience on Earth. That's what you can definitely say. Now, what you're alluding to is expressed even more concisely in the next book that I just sent to the printer. It's now out in ebook form called The Etheric Crystal, The Third Tunnel, which concerns the civilization of the inner earth is reaching out and trying to help humanity. But it also discusses some of their interactions with the political machine and how they cannot be revealed. There's so many touchy things that there's talk about putting alchemical elixirs into the market, but this doesn't really work because you have to make the progress on your own. There are discussions, a great discussion about this outreach to humanity.
We have 2 minutes.
Yeah. And the more you see it, this is the whole thing is if you pretend there's a bunch of people that can help us on the other side, they're angels, whatever you want to call them, they're having a hell of a challenge because of what's going on here. So it's like, ooh, and this is, we need a lot more.
It's a big picture.
Activity. We need a lot more activity, and the stars will play out which way they play, and we have our own destiny to steer amongst them and to find our way. Sometimes the seas can be very challenging.
Peter, what would you please give out your information in terms of the books where people can actually find the books, and of course the videos and anything else, the newsletter.
Yes, skybooksusa.com. Skybooksusa.com is where you can sign up for the newsletter. As a paid subscriber for the newsletter, you can also order the various books I mentioned. The new book, Etheric Crystal, will be given a special offer. I will put that up in the next week. And skybooksusa.com. You can also go to the timetraveleducationcenter.com to look at the free videos on math and physics of time travel, demonstrating how it does not violate the laws of math and physics.
Wow. It seemed like we talked for 15 minutes. It went by that fast, which it usually does. Well, I do want to thank you so much, Peter, for being on the show. And of course, as always, we do have to come back. You have to come back and we have to talk some more. So I thank you so much for being on the show. And I thank the audience as well for tuning in. And I'd love to hear your comments, your responses. So do visit the expansionzone.com website. And of course, you can email me as well. Listen to this show again and all those in the archive at theexpansionzone.com and of course, on YouTube and so on. But do subscribe to the free newsletter for theexpansionzone.com as well so that we can update you on everything that is going on in terms of upcoming guests and other things. And my website, to find out more about me, do visit therealsoniabarrett.com, therealsoniabarrett.com. There's lots going on there as well. So I thank you so much once again. And as always, remember to live life to its fullest and question everything. Until next time, see you then.
Wilkier Theatricum Botanicum returns this June 6th through October 4th with outdoor repertory theater, events, and educational programs for all ages. A Midsummer Night's Dream is back, alongside Romeo and Juliet, Treasure Island, Noel Coward's Waiting in the Wings, and Bernardo Cubría's dark and incisive new comedy, The People of Pompeii, set in the aftermath of the 2025 Palisades fire. Theatricum is located in Topanga Canyon, just off the 101 freeway, in the shade of the California live oaks. Explore and picnic in the gardens before the show. Further information available at www.theatricum.com and at kpfk.org.
You're invited to join us Tuesdays at 1 p.m. for Planting Medicine, formerly Herbal Highway, enhancing the community's knowledge of herbal medicine by sharing voices of traditional, holistic healers and healing practices. Hosted and produced by Emiliano Lemus and Renee Camila,